Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. in Chicago. Filling in for Matt Bubala, be here till 5 a.m. And on my phone now, it is not 3:42 a.m. for my caller, because he is in the United Kingdom. Spencer Lee is in the U.K. What time is it there, Spencer?
Hi, Jim. Just coming up to a quarter to ten, 9:45.
9:45.
It's a fairly clear day here in Liverpool. We had a bit of rain recently, which we needed because there's been very little rain in the last month or two.
So the sun is out and it is midday. Here we are. I'm looking outside my window here at the 18th floor, and it is as dark as night. It is 3 a.m. and here you are, almost ready for tea and crumpets at noon.
Well, yeah, looking at the cat across the road, actually. Yeah.
So you're in Liverpool.
That's right, yes, yeah, and I'm going to see Graham Nash tonight in Liverpool.
Oh, really? Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Where is he playing?
He's playing the Philharmonic Hall, which is a very famous hall in Liverpool, actually. As you probably know, in Britain in 1956... people started off in skiffle bands rather than rock and roll bands, influenced by Lonnie Donegan, who were playing T-chess basses and things like that.
Right.
And John Lennon's group was called the Quarrymen.
Right.
And there were lots of Liverpool bands who were skiffle bands. And then on the 20th of March, 1958, Buddy Holly played the Philharmonic Hall in Liverpool. And you walked up a hill to the Philharmonic Hall, as it were, and people walked up there to see Buddy Holly. They'd never seen a Fender Stratocaster before because you couldn't get them in the UK because of import restrictions. And they came down that hill rather like St. Paul on the road to Damascus.
You know? Oh, my God.
They'd seen the light and everyone wanted to switch on. And it changed popular music forever.
You know, I've been to Liverpool a couple of times and I love the city. The Mercy is so cool. I'm a huge Beatle fan. I'm a huge music fan. And you just walk around the streets like Matthew Street, and the history is just pouring out of it, isn't it? Isn't the church, is it St. Barnabas?
St. Barnabas Church, that's where the Beatles played.
Right.
Yeah.
Oddly
enough, a couple of years ago, Judy Collins was in Liverpool, and we were talking about Amazing Grace, and I took her around the corner from the radio station where I work, Radio Merseyside, and there's Manistee's Lane there, and John Newton wrote Amazing Grace, and he'd been a slave ship captain.
Wow.
And his boss was someone called Manistee, and the street was named after him.
Oh, very cool.
So she loved getting that little bit of history.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, what's so cool... you know, I went on one of those Beatles tour, and I actually went on one that was just a self-guided, I'm not a self-guided, but an individual tour. It wound up being the guy knew Pete Best's mom.
And he, so did I, yes.
Oh, really? And he took us...
I know the Best family pretty well, and Rogue Best has just opened a museum in Matthew Street in Liverpool, close to the Cavern, which is four floors of Beatles memorabilia, in fact.
Well, we went into the basement, like where they had the teen club, where his mom had the teen club.
In the Casbah, yes. That's still there, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they say they had about 1,300 members for that club, but you couldn't get 1,300 members in that space, you know.
Yeah, it's a small little...
And even in the Cavern, you could only get 500 or 600 in there.
Yeah, I mean, the Casbah club...
These books that say sort of 1,300 people saw the Beatles or something are just talking nonsense, actually. The places weren't that big.
Yeah, it is. It's very. If you are a Beatles fan, it is worth to go to see Liverpool because the history and so many of the songs. I mean, you can go to Penny Lane and you do see the roundabout and the barber shop, and you can see Strawberry Fields. And as I said, you've gone on some tours. This Casbah Club is like in a basement, and there was this image of John Lennon drawn by Cindy Lennon, his first wife, because they met as young kids as art students.
Oh, it's great, all the little bits of history. I mean, and recently you've had James Corden taking Paul McCartney around.
Oh, that was amazing.
America, haven't you?
Yeah.
He's taking Paul McCartney around Liverpool, and that was marvelous because McCartney was so into it, really.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Corden was a perfect host in that.
Yeah, that worked out really cool. That was like you said, Paul was legitimately into it, and Corden was couldn't have been more of a fan, you know.
Because a lot of I'm very interested that you signed James Corden up because he's so unlike most of the American presenters who on those TV shows tend to be very brash and over the top, and he actually is very good, and whoever thought of signing him up for a TV series, you know, had some real vision there, and he was perfect with McCartney, I thought.
Oh yeah, and that whole carpool karaoke now has become his his calling card,
but they missed some of it out because the first thing they did actually was go down to the Beatles statue at the Pierhead in Liverpool, and McCartney came out of the car and saw the statue, which he hadn't actually been to before, and it just so happened that there was an official tour of tourists at right. that very moment, and so the tour guide was saying, "We've got this statue here, and here's the real Paul McCartney." In fact, I'm seeing Paul McCartney on Thursday because he's going to be at the graduation ceremony at his famed school, Lipper.
Oh, very cool, very cool. So what I wanted to talk to you about is, and I did not know that you were in Liverpool, but this does have a connection. I'm a huge fan of Elvis Costello, and yeah. and he actually, while he was born in London, he moved to Liverpool.
I think we sort of call him a scouser, really. Both his parents come from Liverpool. And in fact, his mother used to work in Rushworth and Draper's record store, which was only three or four shops along from Nems, where Brian Epstein's shop. And almost certainly, the Beatles will have gone there and may well have bought records from his mother there.
Oh, how interesting!
So, but the parents split up,
right?
And Elvis lived in London for quite a bit of the time. But the father was a jazz singer, and he also worked with the Joe Loss Band, singing sort of covers of current hits on the radio, and he did a lot of that. I mean, when Elvis Costello started out in 1977, the sort of punk era was, the idea was that it was year zero, wasn't it? And Glenn Matlock got sacked from the Sex Pistols because he liked the Beatles, you know, and they weren't having anything to do with that. And the idea was that these groups, like the Clash and the Jam, weren't acknowledging their heritage. They were coming up from year zero, which was clear nonsense because they were all fans, really. And Elvis Costello's the classic example of that. He'd got so much music in him, and he's had so many influences as he was growing up, particularly from his father, who was a really nice guy, an Irish guy, who knew an awful lot of Irish songs, which obviously would have impressed Elvis Costello himself. And some years ago, in Liverpool, if you come from Liverpool, you're known as a Scouser, so I'm a Scouser, you see. And they gave out Scousology awards, because we're always very self-reverential in Liverpool. And this particular year, there was going to be a Scousology award to Elvis Costello, and I was asked to give this award to him.
Oh, but great.
It turned out that he couldn't come to the ceremony because he could only be in England for so many days a year because of the tax laws.
Oh, how interesting.
And he'd used up the number of days of the year because he'd gone to some football matches, you see, and that had eaten up the days.
Oh, how funny.
And so he said his mother would pick the award up on his behalf, you see.
Oh.
And I gave the award to his mother, and she said the lovely line, she said, I love Elvis and his music, but I could never understand why he changed his name when we gave him such a beautiful one, Declan Patrick McManus.
Right, and his father's name was Ross McManus, as you said. And in fact, you know, when Elvis, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because over the last couple of weeks, I mean, he really shocked the world, and certainly those of us who are big fans of his, when he announced that he is battling cancer and recently had a surgery for cancer. He had a kind of an aggressive, didn't go into detail as to what kind of cancer, and he had to cancel his European leg of his tour. Now, I have noticed that now he is still supposed, he is still, I have not seen him being canceled yet. He's supposed to be playing in Chicago in September at one of the festivals here called Riot Fest, and I know that he's got some dates lined up for November, so hopefully he has beaten this, or that the prognosis is good, but it certainly, you know, sent a shockwave because...
Yeah, well, the report that I read said that he'd gone back on the road too soon after surgery.
Right, yeah, and so then he did some shows, and he was just not physically able to do it, and so the doctor said, look, this was serious stuff, and you're just going to have to take a little rest. But yeah. It really just took, it made me take a step back, because as we've seen over the last 10 or 15 years, especially over the last 5 or 6, we've seen so many, it seems like the rock and roll lifestyle I've been saying over the last several years certainly seems to sadly have an expiration date. And it seems like
people are in their 60s.
Yeah.
Now.
In their late 60s and early 70s, it seems like a lot of rock and rollers, that rock and roll lifestyle that they led in their 20s and 30s, may be taking its toll as they reach their late 60s or early 70s. But,
well, I don't know. I mean, once you reach the age of 70, you're allowed to die of anything. Yeah, I mean, there was this thing about people dying at 27.
Right.
And a friend of mine, Howard Soons, wrote a book about all the people who died at age of 27.
Yeah, like Janis Joplin and
Robert Johnson at the crossroads,
right,
and things.
Yeah.
When I started work, when I was 18, people used to retire at 65.
Right.
I was amazed how many of them died within a few years.
Right.
The expectation of life has gone up dramatically now.
Yeah.
And, so many people are making it to 100. But, he's in his 60s, and sadly, people do get cancer.
Oh, I know. And like I said, but it just took me by surprise. I've been a fan of his, as you said, since 1977. And what was so great, what you were saying about, he did emerge during, the whole punk era of the late 70s and 77. And he was certainly sold. He had that nerdy look. He had, as you were mentioning at the beginning of our conversation, he was wearing the Buddy Holly horn rim glasses. And, you got to give him, he had a lot of moxie. Because instead of Declan McManus, he took the rock and roll name. There was only one Elvis before Elvis Costello, and to his credit,
yes, and he took it just before Elvis died. Too.
Right.
So it looked as though it was going to rebound very badly on him when Elvis died, actually,
yeah,
and he'd got that name.
But to his credit, with this, almost 40-year career, he really was able to take that name and make a name for it himself. That now there are two Elvises. And
indeed, yes, yes. No one thinks it's odd anymore. He's done some remarkable things. In the middle of that punk era, he makes a country album, the Almost Blue album, which has some fabulous songs on it.
Well, that's the thing that I've
just been getting out my Elvis Costello records while we were waiting for this interview to be lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at a rough count, I've got about 520 tracks by him.
Believe me, I've got almost everything he's done. I've been a fan from day one. And and the one thing that is so great, though, when he emerged, he was being sold as this kind of punk rocker, but what's really given him, I think, the longevity and of not only of his career, and as you said before, his dad, his background with music. He's a musical historian as well as one of the great writers of the 20th century, I would say. But this guy's music has touched, as you said, there's punk, and then there's country. Did the Almost Blue album. Then he did the album with Burt Bacharach, with the Painted from Memory. And then he worked with Paul McCartney on the Flowers in the Dirt and in Spike his own. And then he's got more of the punkish stuff that on his own with This Year's Model and then in Unarmed Forces. And then he moves into a more popish kind of horn-driven soul thing with both Get Happy and Punch the Clock. And then there's Imperial Bedroom, which uses a lot of orchestration. He's written an opera. He's done Baroque with the Juliet letters, you know, with a quartet. I mean, he's really just run the gamut. It's really been amazing. And most recently, he worked with The Roots and with Alan Toussaint, you know, with after the Katrina flooding here in New Orleans. So
he did a concert tour and came to England with Alan Toussaint. And yes, there's just so much work. I've thought on occasions that I might do a book on Costello, but you know, there's just so much to actually deal with. I did a book on Paul Simon a couple of years ago, and in a way that's sort of much easier going because Simon only makes an album about once every 5 years.
And like you said, and
so there isn't a lot to write about.
And on almost every Elvis Costello album, especially like Get Happy, had like almost 20 songs on it.
Indeed, yes, he's tremendously prolific. Yeah. And astonishingly so. And the quality of his songwriting is really good. There are a lot of people I know, though, who can't take his voice. You know, it's not a voice like Roy Orbison that people say, oh, what a fantastic voice. I know when the Burt Bacharach album came out,
right,
people thought there were great songs on there, but, you know, why is Burt Bacharach working with Elvis Costello on that voice, you know, when he could have worked with Dionne Warwick? So it isn't a great voice. It can do pretty well what he wants it to do, but it's not as strong as a sort of really big artist like the sort of Elton Johns and the Roy Orbisons, I think.
Well, my hope is that that people, you know, I mean, we're you know, keeping our fingers crossed because we certainly don't want him to pass, because I think there's a lot more that he can do. But at the same time, I do hope that at least this was a little wake up call for people, that Elvis Costello gets on their radar screen, because, you know, he's been around for a long time. He's well known, but at the same time, I still think he falls into that kind of cult artist, and I would really hope that more people, especially in these days, like you just said, you're looking over playlists and Spotify and Pandora and all these different ways you're finding music, and I think every record collection has to have at least 4 or 5 Elvis Costello albums in it. And in today's world, I would hope that people, really dig deep into his catalog, because there is one of my favorite lyrics of all time comes from his King of America album, from the song Brilliant Mistake. And he says, she says that she was working for the ABC News. It was as much as the alphabet as she knew how to use.
Well, there's all that clever wordplay.
Oh, yeah.
It's in so many of his songs. And he also has done some very good instrumental work. There was a TV series called GBH that was partially set in Liverpool, and he did all the music for that. That was in the early 80s. So he is very, very talented, I think, and good to see live.
Oh, yes.
Last time I did see him with Burt Bacharach in Liverpool, actually.
Yeah, so did I.
Last time I saw him, he was doing his... It was a tour based around his autobiography, and that was a very good book, very, very interesting book, his autobiography, I thought.
Did you ever see the Spinning Wheel tour back in the 80s?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
that was a good tour. about 50 or 60 songs, and, you know, he rehearsed them all.
Yeah,
and
that was so cool.
It was just luck as to what it came out. It was a good gimmick, I thought.
Yes, it was. It was a takeoff kind of on the Wheel of Fortune that we have here in Chicago, in the United States, a game show. He had about 50 or 60 songs printed on a wheel, and he picked people out of the audience, and they spun the wheel, and whatever song it landed on, the band played it, and that person got to sit up on stage and sit at a bar and watch them play it. How cool was that?
All right. Yes, I once went to see Eddie Reader, and my seat turned out to be on stage, which really surprised me.
Oh, very cool. Well, Spencer Lee, thank you so much for taking time on a Saturday morning in Liverpool. I envy you. I wish I was there because I love the UK, and I really fell in love with Liverpool. And I thank you for taking time and talking about music and talking about Elvis Costello. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Take care.
Bye.
Cheers. We will take a quick break after this. No switching.